consumption. Hello, VOA 1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. On today's program, Gregory Stockel has a story on illegal lithium mining in Nigeria. Brian Lynn explains what no-buy rules are. Later, Jill Robbins presents the everyday grammar lesson on talking about hot weather. But first, Dan Friedel and Anna Mateo report on a long-term care worker shortage.
The hardest part of Hulix Wibonelli's first job in long-term care was not getting hurt. Wibonelli is from Kenya. In 2014, she worked as a certified nursing assistant, or CNA, in Atlanta, Georgia. She went to the homes of mostly older clients and helped them with everything, from bathing to cooking. Wibonelli worked alone. Sometimes she had to lift clients who were much bigger than she was. It was hard work. She earned only $9 an hour and received no benefits. If not for her second job as a babysitter and her husband's wages, her family would not have made enough money to support their four children. My paycheck was almost nothing. I was shocked by the amount of work we did and the pay we got, Wibonelli said. Wibonelli's experience shows a bigger problem in the long-term care workforce. Those who care for older adults in private homes and assisted living places face low wages and the risk of injury. The industry also has trouble finding enough staff. Those findings are part of an investigative report by the Associated Press and CNHI News.
The need for these workers is rising as more people get older. By 2030, about 20% of the U.S. population will be 65 or older, the U.S. Census Bureau says. It's a national problem, and it's everywhere, said Dr. Stephen Crystal. He is director of the Rutgers Center for Health Services Research. The industry has dealt with worker shortages and high turnover for years. These problems got worse during the COVID-19 pandemic. Nursing care places lost many workers during the pandemic. The workforce has still not fully recovered. In March, a study of nursing home providers by the American Healthcare Association found almost all have open jobs and difficulty recruiting. Turnover is so bad at nursing homes that some lose all their employees within a year, said Alice Bonner. She is director at the Center for Innovative Care in Aging at Brown University in Rhode Island. The people who are left are working much harder. Double shifts, overtime, and with temporary workers, Bonner said.
Noelle Kovaleski is an administrator of the Carbondale Nursing and Rehabilitation Center in Pennsylvania. She said the biggest difficulty is the lack of candidates. One nurse supervisor job at her place went unfilled for 2 years. There is no workforce coming in, Kovaleski said. They're just not out there. Workers pass on these jobs for many reasons, including low pay and a competitive labor market. Nurses, for example, can earn more money working at hospitals than nursing homes, Bonner noted. Experts expect more worker shortages as the industry grows. The need for full-time workers in long-term care is expected to increase by 42% between 2021 and 2036, says the Federal Health Resources and Services Administration. The need for direct care workers, who make up most of the workforce, is expected to grow 41%. Direct care workers are important in the lives of their patients. They help with bathing, medication, and meals. These workers are mostly women and people of color. Many are immigrants. Victoria Gardner is unable to use her arms and legs. She considers her at-home caregiver to be a lifeline. Her caregiver helps her 16 hours each day. Without this care, Gardner could not bathe, prepare meals, do laundry, or clean her home. My situation is fragile because I have one caregiver, Gardner said. I'm not alone in that. The industry added about 1.5 million new direct care workers between 2012 and 2022. It is expected to add close to 800,000 new direct care jobs through 2032, which experts say will be hard to fill.
Low pay is a big reason for the worker shortages. The average yearly wage for home health and personal care aides was $33,380 in May 2023. These earnings were similar to cafeteria attendants and retail sales workers. Experts say wages are low. Medicaid is the main payer of long-term care services. But many experts say Medicaid reimbursement rates are too low to properly pay workers. Some states have tried to improve the workforce by requiring a percentage of providers' Medicaid reimbursements to go to direct care worker wages. Others have used money from the 2021 American Rescue Plan Act to increase wages and recruiting efforts. Meanwhile, the Biden administration made a rule in April requiring 80% of Medicaid payments for home care services go to pay workers. Another reason long-term care workers are leaving the field, researchers say, is a lack of respect inside and outside the industry.
Barbara Bowers is founding director of the Center for Aging Research and Education at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She said of long-term care workers, "I don't think they get anywhere near the respect they deserve for the very hard work they do." Zulma Torres is a longtime home health aide in New York City. She said she used to cry after work because of how people treated her. For years, she earned $6.25 an hour. Sometimes clients treated her like a maid, expecting her to cook for the entire family. In some cases, when she took her client to the hospital, she felt judged by the nurses and doctors. "Many times," Torres said, "you feel like just walking out." Hulix Wibonelli, the certified nursing assistant in Atlanta, now earns $18 per hour at an assisted living facility. But she has had to put up with years of low wages, layoffs, and severe headaches from being injured by a client. She still feels she is not paid enough. "I can go to Walmart and make more money than being a CNA," Wibonelli said. Still, even with the low pay, she plans to stay in the industry. In addition to working as a CNA, Wibonelli is studying at Georgia State University to become a registered nurse in long-term care. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
And I'm Dan Friedel.
Since April, Nigeria's government has been arresting illegal miners for reportedly stealing lithium. Lithium is a metal that is used to make batteries for electric vehicles and many electronic devices. Nigeria is making an effort to regulate its mining operations. The country also aims to deal with illegal activity and to profit from its mineral resources. Demand for lithium, tin, and other minerals has increased. Illegal mines are common in the West African country's growing mining industry. Corruption among government officials is common, and the mineral deposits are found in areas with little government presence. Officials say profits from illegal mining have helped armed militia groups in the northern part of the country. The most recent arrests took place in mid-May. A joint team of soldiers and police officers carried out a raid on a market in Kishi, in southwestern Oyo State. Local people said the market had become a center for illegal trade and lithium mined in remote areas. The three-day operation resulted in the arrest of 32 individuals. The state government said they included two Chinese nationals, local workers, and mineral traders. Lithium was also seized. Jimo Bioku is from Kishi. He said there had been secretive searches for the mineral in remote places in the past year by Chinese nationals. He said the Chinese paid people to dig for the mineral and turn the market into a midway point. He added, "The community was worried about the insecurity that usually follows illegal mining." He said that is why they reported it to the state government. China is the major producer of electric vehicles, or EVs, and supplies parts to other countries. China-owned companies employ mostly people leaving conflict and poor conditions in Nigeria's far north. They work in mining operations throughout the country. China's nationals and companies are often criticized for damaging the environment, exploitative labor conditions, and questionable or illegal mining. There have been at least three cases of illegal mining arrests involving Chinese nationals in recent months. President Bola Tinubu has repeatedly blamed illegal mining for the worsening conflict in the country's north. He has asked the international community for help. The Chinese embassy in Nigeria's capital, Abuja, did not answer a request for comment from the Associated Press on the arrests and claims of illegal operations. However, the embassy released a statement last year following a report by The Times of London. The report said Chinese miners were reportedly paying militants to let their operations continue. The embassy said it has always urged the Chinese companies and nationals in Nigeria to follow Nigerian laws and rules. Nigeria is becoming a new source of lithium in Africa. The world's largest producers, like Australia and Chile, are unable to meet the growing demand. Emeka Okoro is with SBM Intelligence, a company based in the city of Lagos. Okoro said illegal activities are denying the government income. The company has researched illegal mining and terrorism financing in northern Nigeria. A Nigerian industry group says the government loses $9 billion from the stealing of the resource each year. The government set up a group of 2,200 law enforcement officials earlier this year to fight the losses. Before the raid in Kishi, the law enforcement group seized two trucks filled with lithium outside of Abuja in April. Later that month, the group raided an area in Karu in Nasarawa State near Abuja. That led to the arrest of four Chinese nationals and the seizure of tons of lithium. Segun Tamori is a spokesperson for the Solid Minerals Ministry. He said those cases are now in court. On April 22nd, a federal court in the north-central area of Iloran found two Chinese nationals guilty for illegal mining. The court sentenced them to a one-year jail term or a fine. I'm Gregory Stockel.
Some Americans have been setting their own no-buy rules in an attempt to reduce wasteful spending and save money. Creating no-buy rules themselves can be easy. People simply make a list of non-essential things they plan not to buy for a specific period of time. The idea has caught attention on social media, with people and groups sharing progress on their goals. But keeping such rules can be difficult, especially for extended periods of time. Reporters from the Associated Press, AP, spoke to some people who have set their own no-buy rules, as well as experts. Here are some of their ideas on how to come up with a list of rules, as well as ways to keep no-spend promises. Whether it is beauty products, ordering takeout food, or buying unnecessary low-cost items at the store, experts suggest knowing your weaknesses so you can make realistic plans. Mia Westrap is a PhD student in Southampton, Britain, who decided to establish a no-buy promise or pledge. But before starting, she took a close look at what she spent money on during the previous few months. Through that process, Westrap realized that unnecessary food and drinks were her big weakness. "I figured out that I was spending four figures on just carbonated drinks and Pepsi Max," she said. Experts say one of the fun parts of no-buy rules is there are no set rules. Individuals get to choose what to include and what not to. Amia Wadsworth is a 22-year-old living in San Diego, California. She told the AP she used to love spending hours looking at clothes and interesting knickknacks at places like Target and Goodwill. But when she moved back home after finishing college, she realized how many things she had built up over the years. When I have those decluttering moments and I look through all my stuff, I was finding things that I bought and spent a lot of money on and then never ended up wearing, Wadsworth said. To keep her rules, she chose not to buy new clothing and to center most spending only on experiences involving loved ones. Wadsworth also set her rules to be on a month-to-month basis. Experts say it can be a big help for people to write down their rules to help remember and keep them. However, it is also fine to slightly change some rules, if needed, during the process. Take a break before buying. When Wadsworth feels a strong desire to get something she sees on social media or at a store, she writes it down instead of immediately buying the item. At the end of each month, she then goes over the list and decides what, if anything, is worth buying. Between pop-up offers and influencers praising new products, social media can be a trigger for unnecessary shopping, said Courtney Alev. She is a financial advisor at the company Credit Karma. If someone feels they are spending too much because of long periods spent on a computer or a device, Alev says they should take a break from any services providing an urge to buy things. As Westrap began her no-buy year, things did not start well. During the first month, her car broke down. Then she received a costly parking fine. Experts say unexpected costs or weak moments happen to everyone. So it is okay if people do not end up following their no-buy rules exactly. Carrie Rattle is the chief executive of financial advisory company Behavioral Sense. She told the AP, if you fail, you probably need a bit more help. You are not a failure. You have simply failed at one method. Rattle added that the realization is very important so that people don't feel dejected. I'm Brian Lynn.
In many places where our readers and listeners live, the weather is getting hotter because of the changing seasons and weather-related events. This week on Everyday Grammar, we will discuss ways to talk about hot weather in English. One common way to talk about hot weather is with phrasal verbs. A phrasal verb is a group of words that acts as a verb and is made up of a verb and a preposition, an adverb or both. Let us begin with an American pop song from 1979. In the song Too Hot, the group Kool and the Gang sang about finding shelter in the shade.
Oh, it's too hot, too hot, too hot, baby. Too hot. Gotta run for shelter, gotta run for shade.
Note that the singer uses the expression run for before the words shelter and shade. The phrasal verb run for something means to work towards a goal. You may have heard of people who run for a public office. To run for shade is to move into an area where the direct light of the sun is blocked. Usually it is cooler in the shade. Another phrasal verb we use is heat up. Like other phrasal verbs with the preposition up, it means there is an increase in something. Here, the increase is in the temperature. For example,
the day started cool in the morning, but heated up in the afternoon.
Another way of speaking about hot weather involves collocations. A collocation is a particular combination of words that we hear at the same time. For example, one collocation is sweltering, with heat or summer.
The southern half of Japan gets sweltering summers. We go to the pool to escape the sweltering heat.
A third way is to describe the weather with words we use for cooking. We are making a metaphor when we compare the effects of heat on us to cooking methods. To sear meat, for example, is to heat the surface quickly. We might say,
he never turns on the air conditioner, even in the searing heat of summer.
To scorch is to slightly burn something, so it is not surprising that we hear this word used in the summer.
It's a scorcher. Let's go to the beach.
Usually we talk about roasting meat or cooking it with dry heat. In that case, roast is a transitive verb that needs an object. But when we use it to say how hot we feel, it is an intransitive verb that does not need an object. For example, you can simply say,
I'm roasting. Give me a cold drink.
The same is true of the verb boil. Usually we boil foods like eggs, but in hot weather, we might say,
I'm boiling. How about having ice cream?
One last hot weather expression. It's so hot that... A common statement with this is,
it's so hot that you can fry an egg on the sidewalk.
How do people talk about the heat where you live? Do you use phrasal verbs, collocations, or metaphors? How about intransitive verbs? Write to us at learningenglish@voanews.com and we will share your messages in another story. And that's Everyday Grammar. I'm Jill Robbins.
Hi, Jill. Thanks for coming on the show today. What made you think about today's everyday grammar topic?
I guess that's because our local swimming pool opened at the end of May, and I was watching the weather to decide when a good time to go swimming would be.
And it's been pretty warm here lately, hasn't it?
Yes, we started having summer weather about a month ago.
I was surprised at how many different grammar points you found in how we talk about weather.
Yes, I talked about phrasal verbs and metaphors, and a comparison. But I didn't really have time to explore one of the funniest ones. When we begin a statement with, it's so hot that...
Those can be funny. Can you give us some more examples?
Sure. How about this one? It's so hot, chickens are laying hard-boiled eggs.
I like that. Did you find any more?
I sure did. It's so hot, my dream house is any house in Alaska. And it's so hot that when I got home from the grocery store, my bacon was done cooking.
And there's another expression, it's hotter than a ghost pepper.
Hey, that's a good one, Dan. One more. Have you heard, it's so hot, the birds have to use pot holders to pull worms out of the ground?
I haven't heard that one. Anyway, thanks for joining us today, Joe.
My pleasure, Dan.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.